Knowledge can improve your life. We know it's hidden, no beginning. They control the dice, and the price of fame is shifting blame for the game. Since Jesus himself put his hands on the craps game, who's behind the bag? Now we see on TV a bag lady acting shady, seems likely to be a bunch of old families who call themselves gods, who are trying to control all that we got with all that we know. Enough is enough. 1,000 years later, we know enough to end the run of evil and all that it means. So fuck Prince Charles and fuck the Queen. 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 Fuck the world if they can't adjust. Come up your bootstraps, jack straps. If you must, you bust. Back at the lust for power. We grow by the hour. They cut in water so soon. Can't shower, they cut food, cause the feedback is now they don't need jack smack for a herd, getting cold by getting dull fast, they cutting power, cause they want it all, make us feel smart, we give it up, we'll never give it back at all, they on call 24-7, generations over nations, and it's no repentance, so we finally pass the sentence, gotta speak the sentence at two, first, gotta clarify who's lying, who's the worst, take a poll worldwide, where they saw who died, at the hands of plans, our history hides, keep going where the money flowing straight to the top, who had it before and has it now, who never stopped. Fuck the Queen. 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 Fuck the Queen.
Prime Minister of Australia, he said, look, there's an oil crisis. I'm going to make direct deals with Arab oil producers. Oil for technology. Australia will produce technology for them. We'll get our oil guaranteed. And London and New York said no. And at that point, the Governor General of Australia intervened to overthrow Whitlam and impose Malcolm Fraser. And it was a complicated thing because the Australian Parliament immediately voted no confidence in the new puppet, Fraser, and tried to get Whitlam back. And there was a period of about 6 months of tremendous chaos.
Who won that fight?
The Queen.
Good morning, CKLN listeners. It is Thursday, the 29th day of April, 2010. You are listening to CKLN Rude Awakening with your host, BK, a.k.a. Black Krishna. Here on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays on CKLN 88.1 FM, Rogers Cable Box 947, and CKLN.FM online. I also post the shows after the show at archive.org, Radio for All. .net. It's radio number 4all.net and at podomatic.com. You can email me if you have any questions, answers, suggestions, news tips, music you want to play, whatever. Break me off an email at blackkrishna@gmail.com. That's blackkrishna@gmail.com. And to start off the show today,
I did hear a track from my album Obamacide called F the Queen. You'll have to forgive me if you're offended by that and don't know why I would possibly say that. Well, I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to play this morning. I do have some ideas for the show when I show up, and I do try and execute a few of those. But one of them is trying to break down a little bit of cinema verite when it comes to discussing the plans of the New World Order, the Anglo-American establishment that's driving all the major power centers of the world to push towards a global governance system of global government. Now, don't get it twisted, folks. A lot of times they say, oh, this isn't global government, it's global governance. Well, the only way you can have global governance is with global government. Otherwise, people wouldn't agree to being governed. And so don't let them play word games and don't let them get it twisted. But I was at the Chapters downtown Toronto near Much Music, upstairs there, or actually on the main floor, and flipping through the magazine sections. And I did come upon a Q magazine. And that Q magazine is... it's a British kind of like Rolling Stone style lifestyle music magazine primarily, and the cover was Lady Gaga, and why should I be too good for this potentially, you know, because some people will say why do you care about that? Why do you care about Lady Gaga? Why do you want to read about Lady Gaga? You know, what kind of sick, depraved lunatic are you? And I'll say, listen, I'm not necessarily a sick, depraved lunatic. I think she's reasonably talented. I think she's being used by the powers that be evil to sell a whole bunch of us a whole bunch of evil crap. And so, I need to keep an eye on this. I need to keep an eye on how this is being done. Otherwise, my, you know, too cool for school butt's gonna be trapped in a world where a bunch of people's values have been destroyed by Lady Gaga and things like this. And they don't recognize how to act anymore. So I'm reading the Q magazine. And in the Q magazine, this article on Lady Gaga, which I chose to flip through specifically, she sold like 11 million albums in the last 6 months or year or something. So, you know, she's certainly a new force in the music scene, but as Alan Watt from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com has posited, you can't just make it in the music business like this. Like, you can't just, you know, all of a sudden, oh, wow, look, isn't it neat? I managed to become a huge success. Like, it, you know, there have to be forces at play that either control you or like the way your head doesn't work to get you to push some of their agendas. And you can just be a perfectly normal, you know, normal human being who happens to believe in all these ideas that the New World Order likes, and you can get put on. So it's a big mixed bag. But as I'm reading the Q magazine at the Chapters, flipping through it, flipping through the Lady Gaga article, the Q magazine, a British music magazine, keep in mind, although probably read worldwide, certainly here in Toronto, said that the Queen of England, I mean, when you say the Queen, you know, that's why I think, you know, well, who runs the world? I think it's the Queen. Because when you say the Queen, you know, even though there's a few of them, everybody knows who you mean. And so the Queen was actually watching a Lady Gaga performance. And according to the reporter in the article, she seemed, you know, amused by Lady Gaga's theatrics and antics. Now, there are people out there that'll say, ah, what are you doing picking on the Queen? You can't pick on the Queen like that. You know, so she has a right to enjoy Lady Gaga, all this, you know, right to, you know, do really silly things type stuff. The bottom line, the reason I'm mentioning this is that just imagine that kind of certification of the kind of insanity that Ms. Lady Poker Face Gaga is selling. Imagine that certification by the Queen. You know, where all throughout England and other parts of the world where the Queen is still a figure of some important influence, they're going, oh, even the Queen thinks she's okay. You know, even the Queen's having a laugh. Why don't you just chill out? Why don't you just relax? And so on. And so that seems to be the prevailing wisdom out there. I looked at this article, and it was mentioned twice that the Queen, you know, was cool with Lady Gaga. Even though Lady Gaga was this crazy chick and doing crazy things, and oh my God, she's so shocked, and what will she do next? The Queen is okay with her. And that gets me back to the whole New World Order system, where essentially the powers that be evil control, the majority of aspects of our society. They control education, political systems and governments worldwide, business systems, banking in particular, where they issue money to everybody. after they print it out of nothing. And so as part of this, as part of, you know, this sort of, you know, cultural laundry list of things they control, they try and sell us ideas, and one of those ideas includes the sort of vacuous hypersexuality, where, you know, you try to be excited, but you know, you're at the same time you try not to act too excited, and so you have kind of like a too cool for school, bored with your success at being successful in this culture. Meanwhile,
the change needed to fix the problems
meanwhile
that caused the financial crisis in the first place. Well, here to weigh in is investigative journalist Webster Tarpley. Thanks for being here.
Thank
so
you.
You know, we're hearing a lot about this. People on the streets are even calling for regulation. Obama's calling for regulation. You're critical, though. Where does this plan fall short?
Well, this is a very weak reform package, and it's the typical predicament of a president who was put into the White House by Wall Street, who's now going to make a show of fighting Wall Street without doing it. And you can see this most clearly in the question of derivatives. Now, what happened in September of 2008 was a world derivatives panic, and we're now in a world derivatives depression. They're being used to attack Greece all the time. If I could just say for a second what I'm talking about here, because some people find it difficult.
Because who can even explain derivatives?
Well,
they're so
try.
Confusing.
Let's give it the old college
let's,
try.
Let's have
here.
You try, Webster. Let's hear it.
We have exchange-traded derivatives. These are options, futures, indices, and all the combinations of those. Those are out in public. What we're more concerned about right now are the over-the-counter derivatives, which are private contracts, secret, behind closed doors.
And aren't these the ones that the reforms are trying to make more transparent?
Yeah, up to a point. These are your collateralized debt obligations, your credit default swaps, your structured investment vehicles, all this stuff secret, none of it reportable. Worth mentioning, all of this stuff was illegal, strictly illegal in the United States under the New Deal from 1936 until 1982. But now it's grown. We have a $1.5 quadrillion derivatives bubble, and I think the results have been catastrophic. When you hear words like toxic, exotic, or troubled, those are derivatives. But let's get now to the specifics. What Obama wants to do is to force the over-the-counter derivatives onto these public clearinghouses and exchanges. Let's give him half a point for that. It's a good half measure. What he really ought to do is make derivatives completely reportable and force banks to list them on the balance sheet, not off the balance sheet. The other good point he has, up to a point, is the Volcker Rule, or what Senator Blanche Lincoln is trying to do in the Senate Agricultural Committee. And that is to say no derivatives can be issued by commercial banks. And that's also fine. We really ought to go all the way back to Glass-Steagall and make that bright line prohibition even clearer.
Well, and you argue that all of the investment banks are now commercial banks, so what will that even matter?
Because they're being allowed to get away with murder. I think the real question with derivatives is, what are you going to do that's got some teeth? For example, let's take credit default swaps. They brought down AIG. That means it's basically issuing insurance without being an insurance company, without meeting the legal responsibility of being an insurance company. Those should simply be banned. And if they're not banned, they will be used to attack U.S. Treasury bonds before we know it. Let's take another one. The collateralized debt obligation, especially the synthetic CDO or CDO squared, that destroyed Merrill Lynch, Bear Stearns, and Lehman Brothers. What are we waiting for to ban those?
Well, Webster, this is what I want to ask. If these are such weak reforms, why is Wall Street lobbying hard in Washington, D.C. for them to not go through?
They just have an irrational phobia about any kind of regulation. I mean, Blankfein was sitting, Goldman Sachs sitting right in front of Obama. He didn't seem to be too upset. The other thing you ought to do is, instead of having this big bureaucracy that Obama wants to have, the consumer protection part of it, just do some simple things. Ban adjustable rate mortgages. They're a disaster. Ban payday loans. Do some simple things like this. The other thing, of course, is if these instruments are so great and so essential, why can't they be taxed? Why can't they bear part of the tax burden that the rest of us bear? How about a sales tax, a Tobin tax, a Robin Hood tax on these kinds of instruments? For example, if the U.S. derivatives bubble is $1,000 trillion, which is the best estimate, a 1% Tobin tax would bring in $5 trillion for the states, $5 trillion for the feds, total $10 trillion. That would essentially solve the question of these budget deficits as long as speculation continues.
All right. Well, Webster Tarpley with his own solutions to financial regulation. Thanks, Webster.
Thank you.
And we're back, CKLN listeners. Pardon me. We are back, CKLN listeners. That was Webster Griffin Tarpley on Russia Today talking about derivatives. Why did I juxtapose that with Lady Gaga? Well, I guess to make it simple and plain, Mr. Tarpley's a rogue academic badass, and he's someone who's been fighting oligarchy, the powers that be evil, the Queen, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, Wall Street, London, the major stock centers of the world for about 30 years now. As, again, a summa cum laude, that's more than magna cum laude, folks. This guy's a really smart dude, should be working for the globalists if he so chose. But instead, he's trying to break things down for us in really simple and plain ways, and yet they're getting harder and harder to understand because the Ponzi schemes are getting more complicated. And that's what things like Lady Gaga and all the escapism and so on are meant to sell us. And for those out there who know this, that's fine. And it's good that you did recognize it. How are you countering it? Because at some point, we may have economic or political or social problems that are big enough to the point where only an explanation like what Mr. Tarpley provides could suffice to settle them and to get us to where we need to go. And if people can't handle that explanation, then we're in a lot of trouble. We're in a lot more trouble than we think. And that's one of the reasons why it's important to break down pop culture, because if that's all people care about, and it can get them at least closer to looking into this stuff, then we should take it. Because at some point, more people have to get from, I like Lady Gaga, I like sports, I just trying to survive, I'm doing my thing, I got a job, I got to pay the bills, whatever the usual, things for not looking into or learning anything, whatever those usual excuses are. What we're noticing right now as we listen to the album The Patterns by Iceberg, ISBJERG. Just enjoyed this album yesterday, doing a little freestyling at home, and I thought it was really neat, a really neat soundscape. Each one of these instrumentals is based on a periodic table of elements table, I guess. It says titanium pattern number 22. Currently we're listening to Sneeze Storm Break. But otherwise it's hydrogen pattern number 1, zirconium pattern number 40, chlorine pattern number 17, and so on. And it could come in handy. It could be important to understand these things going forward, especially derivatives. Especially derivatives. And so I'd like to break that down for just one sec. Derivatives essentially mean, as Mr. Tarpley there tried to explain as well as he could with his incredible knowledge base and analytical skills, derivatives are essentially resold debt. So you have these people that own the debt on mortgages, for example. But they don't just want to sit there and own debt. They want to say to somebody else, hey, do you want to own this debt? Because if you own this debt, they'll owe you money. And isn't it cool to have these people owe you money? So, buy the debt off us, and then over time you collect on the debt and the interest. And so, the debt is resold over and over again, to break it down as simply as I can possibly make it, until it's been resold so many times, the debt is in fact several times its value, it'll just never, ever, ever get paid off. And there's a $1.6 quadrillion hole, derivatives black hole in the global economy, apparently, that's being bailed out consistently because they got to keep throwing money towards this Ponzi scheme. Otherwise, it'll collapse. And so, the American housing bubble, before that, the dot-com boom, both of those were examples of derivatives trading that created the destructive economy. So keep in mind that the people that are behind the crippling of our economy know what they're doing, because they've seen this before in recent history. They've seen what trading in derivatives does, and how trading these credits or debts over and over again leads to a fundamental destabilization of the economic system for more people, a devaluation of the currency, and it leads to new criminal financial instruments being developed to collect capital at the top and steal it from the rest of us. And meanwhile, we're just here chilling, listening to Lady Gaga. We're watching videos. We're surfing YouTube. We're playing with all the toys that we were given to play with by the establishment. Just last night on Queen Street, near Queen and in Gladstone near the Drake Hotel on the way there. I saw a display for the movie A Nightmare on Elm Street where an absolutely gorgeous woman dressed in little underpanties and a bra was in a glass window covered in, you know, blood, ostensibly fake blood. But she was there in a window, literally covered in blood with these streaks of blood all over her body, red lighting, sort of wood doors, and it looked like she was literally a victim in some box out of, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, Silence of the Lambs, Saw movies, you know, basically where a serial killer would keep a victim that they're planning on killing, and maybe they're just, you know, showering with blood. And so we're staring at this gorgeous chick, and she's absolutely gorgeous, and we're all just, blah, blah, boy, you're so hot. But also, it's just a twisted, weird scene. I didn't have my camera on me at the time, unfortunately. I did have my cell phone camera, so I took some very, very brief video stills of this, not for the titillating nature, but just to document, you know, what passes for entertainment today. The modern bread and circuses, the violent bread and circuses, where you take an absolutely beautiful woman, you cover her in fake blood, you stick her in a window for people to ogle, you make it seem like she's in some sort of torture chamber, and you use that to sell the movie Friday the 13th, A Nightmare on Elm Street, pardon me. A Nightmare on Elm Street opening tomorrow. So again, juxtaposing these things with the bigger picture, we're going to need to get hip to some of these issues at some point. And so to help us do that, I'm going to give Mr. Alan Watt from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com a bit of the floor here. Because he is one of the best I've heard at breaking things like this down. So this is again Mr. Alan Watt from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com on the rise of neuroscience and how news guides our views.
Hi, folks. This is Alan Watt, and we're cutting through the matrix. Just talking about how the voice comes and goes, because your nose gets plugged up in the mornings, and again, sometimes runs, your eyes gets dry. That's the spraying in the skies, and they haven't let up in Canada and the States, and even in parts of Ireland too. But you'll find in Europe, because so many of the aircraft now are grounded because of all this supposed volcanic ash in the air that gets into the jet engines of the aircraft, they're having great weather. It's just, I've had letters from Sweden and parts of England saying how blue the sky is. And really, when you haven't seen blue sky for about 12 years, really blue sky, and some people for the first time that have grown up, they're growing up now, they've never really seen deep blue skies. It's just an incredible phenomena. But they put the spin out in the media already to tell you why the skies are so blue. They're not going to tell you they've been spraying the skies since 1998. And this is from Yahoo News and Associated Press. It was Wednesday, that's yesterday. It says, as volcanic ash casts a shadow over millions of lives, Londoners and other city dwellers across Europe were treated to a rare spectacle of nature, pristine blue skies brighter than any in recent memory. The remarkable sight happened in part because massed flight groundings prevented busy airspace from being crisscrossed with plumes of jet exhaust that create a semi-permanent haze and other effects beyond the white contrails themselves. Just as city lights make it necessary for us to go to the desert to appreciate the true glitter of stars, so has modern aviation dulled us to what the noontime sky really looks like until the erupting volcano in Iceland offered a reminder. So that's the spin they've put on already, as though there were no aircraft in the skies before 1998, because the skies were blue then, actually blue, you know, a real deep blue as well. And since the year 2000, and even before that, there'd been less and less airlines in the air at the same time because of the cost of aviation fuel. Different companies have merged together or closed down altogether. The flights themselves are crammed to capacity, full capacity now. So there's actually a lot fewer flights than there used to be. So that's their spin on it anyway. They're telling you that you're seeing blue skies because the traffic are grounded. However, there's other articles too that tells you that the Air Force are also grounded. And I think that's closer to the truth. However, as I say, the further west they go, parts of Ireland, they're already getting the spray there. And they've kept it up in Canada. It's astonishing to watch it. I've watched it for years. I can remember the first day it started in earnest in Ontario, where it was literally, they were half the height that they normally are at now, And they had the sky literally checkerboard from north, south, east, west. It was a checkerboard, very precise looking too. It's like walking into a sci-fi movie when you walked out your door. And these trails they were using then were just the white stripe, and they left plumes from horizon to horizon that stayed there for the whole day. The whole day, suddenly. And it was astonishing to me too that when you ask people to for their impression or, on these trails, how stunned they look, and yet at the same time you could see them go into that, well, where the media hasn't told me anything about this, so I don't have an opinion on it. That's kind of what they tried to tell you, if they could possibly think. That's what they would come up with. And that's probably the truth as well. Most folk really can't think unless the media tells them what to think about something. I mentioned before about how major marketing studies proved many years ago that about 83%, I think, of the general public, when they're asked to pass an opinion on events in their daily lives or in the media and come to some conclusion, they could only pass a superficial conclusion. Generally, they'd actually heard from the same media. So they had no real opinions of their own. And that's probably pretty consistent down through time, I think. That's the majority of the general public. But there you go. There's your spin on it right away. It's because the aircraft, the passenger aircraft are not flying that this is happening. Now, prior to 1998, as I say, there were far more jets on the go. The fuel was cheaper. And I lived in Europe too, and I saw them travel through the sky, and trails always left or always dissipated about a hand span. If you put your hand up to them, to the tail of the craft as it was flying overhead, that's where the end of the trail would start to disappear. They did not last for hours and all day like they do today. But however, that's neither here nor there. That's just how it really is. We're living in magic land, because believe you me, they cannot tell the public what they're doing. They already know the effects of geoengineering. They don't have to have meetings to decide them. They've had years of studying us, and they know the effects of geoengineering. They know all the lung problems, nasal problems, congestion, constant infections, chronic infections. And they also know, I'm sure, what the death rate is with the very young and the elderly. Never mind this incredible new phenomenon that suddenly everyone's got allergies, and suddenly again you have older people, middle-aged people getting asthma for the first time. That never happened in previous decades. You see, it didn't happen. Unknown. So it's a new normal, but we're supposed to adapt it to new normals all the time without questioning it. And most folk, mind you, don't bother to question it at all. Now, I've read so many times different articles on politicians and how they're trained, and they do get trained by professionals, because we're sold a fake persona by politicians. We don't know the real people. We'll never know the real people. Never ever know them unless you've known them prior to that personally. But you'll never know them otherwise. What you get is blurbs in the newspapers, media ops, which are all completely staged and rehearsed, with words written by script writers. And they've got their dress-up people there and their makeup people and all that kind of stuff, just like anybody going into the movies or on the news. And you'll never really know what they're like. Then you get the magazines come out too, and they tell you how wonderful this person's a family man. A family man. So there's a picture of him and a family and all that kind of stuff. It's just nauseating, really. Because we never know the real people. In fact, it's not until long after they leave politics do you begin to find out their background and their connections, their family histories, involvements in politics and all of that kind of stuff. While they're running, and once they're in, no, you'll never really know who they are except what the media projects to you. Now, here's an article here that shows you really, and I don't disagree with them, I know why they do this, but it shows you what they're taught and how they're taught to talk to the public. Just a little bit on it, and it's from the Mail Online, and this is from the 22nd of April. And it says, talk to the public like they're 10-year-olds. That's advice the TV presenter, professional TV presenter, gave Nick Clegg, one of the politicians who's running over there. says Nick Clegg has been secretly groomed for months for his TV debates by a presenter who tells clients to talk to viewers as if they are 10-year-olds. The Liberal Democrat leader has been rehearsing for the leader's debate since November and deployed the services of Scott Chisholm, a former Sky TV anchorman. Mr. Chisholm, who initially denied his involvement with Mr. Clegg, has a top tip for clients ahead of TV appearances. Pitch it, pitch your spiel at a 10-year-old. That's what they're told to do. Listen to this now. It's true. This is true. This is how far we've sunk with the TV generation. If you use words that viewers have to process in order to understand, then they'll miss the next 3 to 6 words you say. Okay? So in other words, if you use a kind of semi-big word that stops them, they're trying to think, what does that mean? They're not listening to the words that follow. So don't use big words. You can keep it simple for a 10-year-old. And he also advises clients, if you're asked a question you know nothing about, do not feel as if you must answer it. And another thing they're taught too, doesn't mention it in this article here, but when they get asked a question that's a kind of cutting-edge question, they could put them on the spot for a personal opinion, or it puts them or their party in a bad light. They're told to not answer the question as it was asked, but as you would have liked it to have been asked. In other words, you reframe the question in your head, and then that's why they never give a direct answer to any question that's kind of sticky. I've all experienced that too, listening to politicians over the years. But there you go. This is what you get now. You get them talking down to us as though we're 10-year-olds, and no one really notices. No one minds. We're used to it. We're actually used to it, you know. And when you get a president, like the last one too, saying that after Saddam Hussein, and got rid of him, not because he was involved in 9/11. He said, no, I never said he was. He says, we just went after him because he was a bad man and the world's better off without him. So people are broken down into bad men. Bad, you know, bad guys. That's how they talk to us. To explain wars. Yeah, he was a bad guy, yeah. We're the good guys, you're the bad guys. And that's how simplistic it is, isn't it? That's how simplistic it is to run the people when they're dumbed down to TV lingo or language. Quite something. White hats and bad hats, black cats, and then that's all, it's bad guys. And it's good enough, what they tell us, it's good enough for the public. There's no howl about, what on earth is he saying? Why is he saying that this like a cartoon? That's what the people are actually used to. Now, again, you get this trivia, as they call it, news holes, as they put stuff in. A lot of it, too, is creating the trends. The trends is the ripples of conversation that go through all media and the internet. People prattle on about it as expected, that they're expected to do so. And those who control the media control the trends and what you're going to be prattling on about. And people have no memory. They have no memory, so you can actually reintroduce the same topic a year later and they'll prattle on about it just as it did when they first heard it, and they can't remember when they first heard it. I'm going to give you an example when I come back from this break. Hi, folks. This is Alan Watt, and we're cutting through the matrix. Just talking about how news is recycled to us through news halls where they set trends for gossip, where we just prattle about things and say, oh, my God, look what they're doing to us now. And everyone you meet can, when you bring up the topic, they'll say the same thing. Oh, my God, yeah, how could they? And we all say the same things. And we don't realize often a trend is being set. It's getting you ready for something, you see. Because when we moan about things, it's like getting something off your chest, and eventually you come to the inevitability where we're all going to get this anyway. But at least you moaned about it. You feel better because you did some moaning to other people. And that's really how it works. So they're called trial balloons when they first give it out to the public. because the public have no memory, and they don't realize the particular thing they're moaning about, that they now believe is inevitable, was programmed into them through previous articles over maybe 1, 2, or even 3 years or more, through trial balloons. You see? The first trial balloon that goes up mentions that some people have been thinking about doing this or a new tax or something, and it's always somebody minor, so there's no danger of it becoming law or anything. So you dismiss it, but you've taken it into your head by osmosis. That's how we learn as humans when we're being indoctrinated gradually as test rats. It's through osmosis, through these trial balloons, and you're being programmed, but you don't remember the trial balloon. And then you hear it again, it's kind of more familiar to you. And then once they're ready to actually push it through, they mention it's mentioned, it's going to be mentioned by the big boys themselves and brought up in the Senate or the Parliament or whatever. That's how the technique always works. So everything's a technique that's used on the public. And it's scientific rulership, really, that you're under. The politicians don't dream it up. They have their experts guiding them on how to do it. But everybody's going on about the value-added tax as though it's a new idea. Now, they don't remember that it was the same thing that was pushed a year ago, just almost exactly a year ago. This article here is from the Washington Post, and it's May the 27th. Once considered unthinkable, U.S. sales tax gets a fresh look, you see, by Laurie Montgomery. It says, with budget deficits soaring and President Obama pushing $1 trillion-plus expansion of health coverage, some Washington policymakers are taking a fresh look at money-making ideas, long considered politically taboo, a national sales tax. That was 27th of May 2009, you see. And then you get the papers today, today's papers. And here it is again. And it's on Google as well, this particular site. Obama aides neither back nor bury the value-added tax. Obama administration officials on Thursday further clouded the question of whether the president would consider a new value-added tax similar to those levied by some European countries. President Barack Obama sounded somewhat open to the idea when it came up in an interview. I know there's been a lot of talk around lately about the value-added tax, he told CNBC on Wednesday. That's something that has worked for some countries. Before you know, I start saying this makes sense or that makes sense. I want to get a better picture of what our options are, Obama said. So that's how they ready you, bit by bit, sometimes month after month, but definitely year after year, for the value-added tax. Now, if you go into the Council on Foreign Relations, the guys that really run the country, you'll find on their own website that they've been talking about bringing the value-added tax in for the Americas, not just for the US, but for the Americas. They've been talking on it, and they've had think tanks working on the project for years.
We're back, CKLN listeners. That again was Mr. Alan Watt from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com from Earth Day, the 22nd of April, 2010, talking about how our culture is managed, initially starting with the chemtrails, how they get us to not notice them, and then segueing into the media and, of course, the value-added tax. And I did happen to glance at a newspaper box yesterday. Perhaps not the most due diligence. I apologize. As a journalist here in the 21st century working for CKLN Radio on Rude Awakenings Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays from 6 to 7 a.m. But I did happen to see what all of us happened to see, and that was a $125 fine for 1 minute of idling in your car, as the cover headline of the Toronto Star yesterday. So, 125, Toronto Star, fine idling. And let's see what, here you go. A minute's idle could cost you $125 at thestar.com. I'm reading here. It says here, city considering ramping up 14-year-old anti-idling bylaw by Paul Maloney, Urban Affairs Bureau, from the 26th of April, 2010. Motorists have mostly ignored Toronto's, quote, toothless efforts to discourage unnecessary idling. And no wonder, with an average of only 76 tickets a year being written for idling longer than 3 minutes. To get them to pay attention to what they're doing to the air, the Board of Health is thinking of reducing the legal idling time to just 60 seconds, eliminating a loophole that says you can idle if it's very cold or very hot, and turning over enforcement to the city's parking cops, who routinely write 2.9 million tickets a year. And when you heard Mr. Watt talk about, Mr. Alan Watt from cuttingthroughthematrix.com, talk about the value-added tax. A value-added tax is essentially, as Paul Craig Roberts, top economist, explained here on this show, on the Alex Jones Show, in a clip I played last week. A value-added tax is a tax added to every stage of production or shipping. So from, you know, when it's brought out of the ground, that's taxed. From when it's, you know, processed, that's taxed. Packaged, that's taxed. Shipped, that's taxed. And those taxes are all passed on to us and collected from us, essentially, as manufacturers and companies don't want to affect their profits and their bottom line and their stock prices and so on. So, you know, they sure as heck don't want to take the kind of dip in their own profits that could put them out of business by just absorbing that tax. And this is part and parcel of the whole thing, and also part and parcel of the whole mean green agenda. It's an agenda for social control. The reason that all these governments and corporations worldwide who have proven they don't care about people are suddenly obsessing with the planet Earth as a concept and what may happen to the weather in the next, 20 years, is because they don't care about people. They don't care about people now, and when they say they care about us in 20 years and they don't want us all to drown because of global warming, melting the icebergs and causing, you know, huge tidal waves and tsunamis, they're lying. They're lying because if they cared about people, then they'd be more consistent about it. And they wouldn't be doing things like this. But that's what this is for. That's what this, the mean green, sustainability, agenda is for. And environmental, modern environmental movement is for. Most environmentalists don't even know that the environmental movement was started by fluoride pollution in, Danora, New York, I believe. D-A-N-O-R-A, according to journalist, Christopher Bryson, in a film called The Fluoride Deception, in a book called The Fluoride Deception, where, as a journalist, he breaks down a substantial amount of what he's found out about fluoride, which is that it's a main ingredient in Prozac. It's an industrial pollutant. Instead of paying to dispose of it safely, they managed to sell it to us to put in our drinking water in certain cities like Toronto, but not like Montreal, Vancouver, or most of Europe, including and Thunder Bay as well. Thunder Bay, Ontario, just voted 6-5. Their city council did, after massive public protests with support of the mayor of Thunder Bay, to discourage the city council from voting to take it. So with the confusion of the environmental movement into attacking us, this is what you're going to see. Back to the article here. Back in 1996, Toronto led the way in fighting smog-causing emissions by passing Canada's first idling-controlled bylaw, which set the limit at 3 minutes and offered a long list of exemptions from the $125 fine. Again, incrementalism, folks. Fabian socialism. If you don't know what Fabian socialism is, it's their greatest weapon and our greatest, you know, solution, is understanding that. Because Fabian socialism, essentially in a nutshell, means they have to move at an incremental pace, introducing incremental changes to our environment. So, you know, first they say back in the 80s, you know, bad doesn't mean bad, man. Bad means good now. And then we're like, yeah, it's bad. That's bad. And they just get us used to saying that's bad to mean good for a while. And we get used to saying, you know, sort of Orwellianly, that bad things are good. And then they introduce the next stage of bad or badass behavior. And now we get to the stage here in the year 2010, in April, at the end of April right now, we get to a stage where we can see things like Torture Garden being promoted in Toronto. There is a Torture Garden here, and we did have a woman in a little, sort of, torture box yesterday, serial killer torture box, on Queen Street, on the north side of Queen Street, near Queen and Gladstone, as I mentioned earlier, for our amusement. We also have this dehumanization resulting in some very interesting things. I've got some friends that work in early childhood education, and some of them, you know, are shocked at what's going on with respect to what's happening with babies today, where there are programs out there at Sunnybrook and other child care centers for children as young as 1 month old, as young as 3 months old. So you have 1 month and 3 month old children who admittedly don't do much, but should be around their parents to be absorbing that kind of consistent love and affection, and so you can bond with them as well, who can be dropped off at 6 o'clock in the morning and then picked up again at 6 o'clock in the evening, like 12 hours. They will take care of your infant in a Brave New World Orwellian, you know, pod-like type existence where they're checked on and they're made sure that they're not crying or whatever, but they are at a very, very, very early age deprived of that mother-child bonding, and at a very, very early age exposed to the cold hands of the state raising them as opposed to their parents, in which for thousands of years worked much better. Not saying things were perfect before by any means, but right now we do have to make sure that our critical thinking capacities are working, because we can realize that the incremental nature of bringing us here and the incremental nature of taking us to the next step means that we could move on the New World Order in much more aggressive and public ways that everybody knows about. Yeah, they know about it, but so does everybody in your hood. And so once the New World Order knows about it, and they know that everybody in your hood knows about what you're up to, then it makes it much more difficult to take you out. So that shouldn't be a major concern. And not with guys out there like Alex Jones, Alan Watt, Webster Tarpley, who you just heard on this show as well. Not with guys like that running point. You know, there's no way that you should be scared of what you're going to say if these guys are out there saying what they say and surviving. And the people that are experts in this area say, if you know anything, if you're a potential whistleblower, get it out there. Get it to a number of people as soon as possible. When my colleague at Toronto Truth Seekers, Mark, when his friend got taken down by the police in a fairly aggressive way, my colleague Mark's friend got taken down by the police in a fairly aggressive way, and he sent us a little note on it. I told him, get us that file immediately. You know, I don't know what's going on here. And this isn't, you know, everybody closes ranks and all this sort of thing. So this isn't anti all the cops. But if that one cop happened to be in a bad mood and a bad day and or had some personal thing or was doing something wrong, then get that file to more people right now. So a bunch of us have copies. And that way, you know, your buddy won't just get taken out and his hard drive and computer taken or yourself. So. Information today is something that we can share widely while people still have the tolerance for it and capacity to handle it. And that's the safest way for everybody. It's safer for us because, you know, once what you know is out there, what's the point in doing you in? All it does is increase its value, according to William Colby, former CIA director, and who worked with them, who advised John DeCamp, former Nebraska senator, and he's also a lawyer, and he's an author who wrote a book called The Franklin Cover-Up about a credit union scandal in Nebraska that exploded into a giant pedophile scandal that went as high in America as up to the White House and as high internationally as to the highest levels of power in the world, as some of the people at the very top of this pyramid who launder their satanic, criminal, you know, Masonic, do what thou wilt, be the whole of the law of values, down until they filter into our culture. So not only do we indulge in them, but we accept that they indulge in them. William Colby, who's former CIA director, turned good guy, said to his friend John DeCamp, if you're going to talk about this, if you're going to get into this stuff, then you have to write a book and just say everything you know. So there's no money in doing yin. There's no worth in doing yin. And so there's a little note there about how to perceive this sort of thing, because psychologically we're going to be indoctrinated into being less capable and less capable of handling this. There's a pincer attack going on right now. And the pincer attack is the happy new age movement saying keep it happy all the time. And then there's the pop culture attack. So you got this keep it happy all the time vibe, and you're supposed to keep it happy, you're supposed to think positive, you're supposed to accept things as what they are and have an open mind to all sorts of values and whatever. And then on the other side, you've got, you know, the mass media and pop culture selling you all this crap. So it wouldn't be so bad if you were all new agey and then, you know, you stuck to more stable, traditional, solid, you know, timely, tested and proven values that could create good individuals or good families or good communities or good cultures. But if you're all new agey and you're totally, totally happy-go-lucky, open-minded with the junk that we have out there to deal with on a regular basis, then you're going to get fooled by it, unfortunately. So on that note, let me take a look at what's happening in the Metro here. It says here, Metro exclusive with NATO chief, page 20 of the Metro. So they're going to give us this Metro exclusive. I do have to flip to this right now just to check this out and to see how they're selling us NATO. Afghan project, quote, long-term, says NATO chief. And it says NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen spoke to Metro about NATO's new offensive in Afghanistan. A new offensive. We like new things. We like new iPods. We like new video games. We like new movies. We like new music. And so in Afghanistan, every few months, there's a new offensive that's supposed to make some substantial difference, if not actually end this conflict. But yes, they are selling us the fact that it's long-term here. As I break down here at 6:51 in the morning, what Elizabeth Brough has to say about what NATO has to say to us. If NATO decides to add charm offensives to its arsenal of military ones, its Secretary General would be its best weapon. Ooh, this guy's a good-looking old white dude, kind of like a chiseled face, a little weathered, and yeah, but he does have a nice haircut, nice suit on, he seems really fit. So she starts off the article with the fact that this guy, in charge of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, combining the British, American, Canadian, and Australian militaries that have done some of the most damage in the world, including Operation Gladio, a plan to bomb cities across Europe to maintain NATO's presence in Europe to fight the communists. So they basically funded false flag terrorism, Operation Gladio. Look into it. A book by Danielle Ganser, Ganser, and Operation Gladio should lead you to a few things, as well as Webster Griffin Tarpley's work on this. So the head of NATO, one of the most criminal organizations in the world, the central command of four militaries, who released a think tank study a couple of years ago, which had a Guardian UK article about it from April of 2007, entitled "Revolutions, Flash Mobs, and Brain Chips," where NATO predicted 30 years of rioting, including climate change crap and food shortages and bread lines and the masses getting all revolutionary in a Karl Marxian and anarchist kind of way, and terrorism and all this other stuff. And instead of trying to stop that, you know, groups like NATO are, in fact, behind preparing for it and saying, oh, yeah, we're getting ready to scrap with this for the next 30 years. Because, in fact, at least one branch or one division or one cadre of their people must be behind planning it. Because if they were good intelligence officers, if these people were as competent and capable as they are shown to be in movies and television and video games, then they should be doing something to stop, you know, what's going on. And you know, no one should say that this Afghanistan project where on behalf of Canadian people, you know, our military is participating with other militaries to kill innocent people, which even the military will admit we do. They say it's accidental, but it does happen. Poison them with the poisonous weapons like depleted uranium and so on. Kill our own militaries and young men and women with the same tactics as well. You know, there would be some justice to this. Anyway, I'm going to go back to the article here because I'm just losing it. There's like 15 million things to say here, but hopefully there's a couple of Googleable bits out there for you in CKLN Radio Land. So back to the start of the article here, because I do want to make it clear how this thing flows, how we're supposed to perceive NATO, according to Ms. Elizabeth Brough at the Metro World News here in Toronto, Toronto edition. If NATO decided to add charm offensives to its arsenal of military ones, its Secretary General would be its best weapon. Anders Fogh Rasmussen, a former Danish prime minister, combines political savvy with a personable demeanor rarely seen among high-ranking politicians. Rasmussen, a former leader of Denmark's center-right Venstre Party, who has led NATO since last August, talked with Metro at NATO's headquarters in Brussels. Question, what are the objectives of NATO's new offensive in Kandahar? Answer, a key element in our new Afghanistan strategy is to enhance the coordination between our military efforts and civilian reconstruction and development. You can see this new strategy at work in Helmand province, where we have liberated the area and provided the governance, development assistance, and an alternative livelihood for people. This kind of operation will be repeated in other parts of Afghanistan. Kandahar is one of those areas because it's a well-known Taliban stronghold. You ever hear old stories of the British trying to civilize India or civilize other countries? Same idea. You know, the reconstruction contracts go to Western companies. The money comes from Western companies. It's donated by foundations and gullible individuals. And these people are just going to the bank, you know, re-engineering a culture that doesn't have an opportunity to engineer itself. Our puppet president, Hamid Karzai, is there. His brother runs the opium trade, and he can barely leave his house, according to most experts on Afghanistan. And so they're going to talk about how these people aren't quite capable enough. You know, in Iraq, they talked about training the Iraqi army for years. We don't even hear about Iraq anymore. So anyway, that's the top of the Metro. Another article here, tax time. It's Toronto the tardy. Reputation, it's income tax time. Guess who has the worst reputation for procrastination? That's right, Toronto. Canada's biggest city had the most returns filed electronically through the QuickTax online service on April 29th to 30th, 2009, according to Intuit Canada. So they're trying to shame us, Toronto. They are trying to shame us in this city. They're trying to shame us into feeling bad about paying our taxes late without questioning what our taxes are being spent on and why our government's been taxing us at a 60% tax rate for decades or somewhere nearabouts and always growing, is now suddenly broke and has no money for us. Money for the wars in Afghanistan, money to say it's a protracted conflict instead of, look, guys, hey, military, hey, politicians, this is your budget. You got to get this done within the next 6 months, or we're going to cut off the money and pull everybody out. And you find a political solution to this, or you find a political solution to this that the other countries should take. And if America and Australia and the other countries that are in England and the other NATO countries and UN groups in Afghanistan don't take the solution and pull out, then we do, because we know they're all liars. And so we could easily do that. But it says here, Toronto's soccer holy grail. Singer Kanon takes a close look at the FIFA World Cup trophy yesterday after it arrived in Toronto. Depending on who you believe, it's the first time the trophy has been in Canada as it tours the world ahead of this summer's World Cup. More coverage, page 32. So, yeah, bread and circuses in the World Cup. Keep in mind the World Cup. We're told that we're in a global system and there are global organizations that manage us. Some harmless ones like the World Cup Federation, maybe the Olympics. Corrupt, sure. Bloated, bureaucratic, yeah. But you know what? It's still good to have those events, right? And those events legitimize the other ones like the United Nations, World Bank, IMF, and so on. Despite what he says, Raheem Jaffer had close ties with the feds. I've seen some of this Raheem Jaffer stuff and so on. It looks like much ado about nothing. There's possibly a crime here, there's possibly not, but it's mostly shades of gray and influence that a jury will deal with. But it's certainly titillating when you throw it on the cover of the paper on a regular basis, and so it does distract us from real and pressing issues. Chavez lets loose on Twitter. And Chavez urged Venezuelans to watch his newly created Chavez Candanga Twitter account. How's it going? I appeared like I said I would at midnight. I'm off to Brazil and very happy to work for Venezuela. We will be victorious. And he's seen as a socialist hero by many, and I was actually a Chavez fan till I saw him recently pimping climate change. And that's right. So I'm afraid Mr. Chavez is part of the giant global move for global communism, global socialism. While he has done some good things, a lot of these guys do good things. Even President Bush, as much as he's hated now, did some good things that his supporters could point to. So instead of saying, you know, oh, but they do this, say, wait, they do that. you know, once in a while, instead of just trying to go, well, don't these equal out, you know, you can say, wait a minute, why would someone who's of good conscience be spewing lies? One curriculum for all, McGinty. Premier insists Catholic and public schools will teach same-sex ed classes. They're coming back. The fascists have regrouped. Porn education is something we have to beat back again. A ton of people in Toronto let our bureaucracy know they don't want our grade one students and grade three students being taught graphic sex education, because it was graphic in the early news stories. It's sort of like a graphic, you're going to take it and eat it and like it, and then later on in most recent stories it's more about anatomy and that sort of thing. So don't let them fool you with the latest spin. Always look into the details, especially if there are critics of this, if there are critics of things like the G20 coming up soon. You know, should we really trust the leaders of the 20 largest and most economically powerful countries in the world so far? Quite possibly not. You know, want some with that burger? Eating meat linked to bladder cancer. One in three women and one in two men in the future are expected to get cancer. You can go to naturalnews.com to read that article and see what types of meats to avoid. Why Rockefeller created Canadian and Quebec nationalism, by anonymous for henrymacow.com, henrymakow.com. Basically, to create the free trade zone and to create strong nationalist movements in both the rest of Canada and in Quebec, they created that fight going on, that fake dialectic back and forth. So you can go to henrymakow.com for more on that. Fascinating little article here, which is pretty well sourced, which talks about how and why the Rockefellers did create Canadian nationalism, a good piece of our history. Conspiracyculture.com, Saturday, May 1st, 2010, the Conspiracy Culture Hour. Freedom Fest is this weekend, folks, and it is a big marijuana loving festival, no doubt about that 20,000 people there, but it is expanding to say, hey, look, if we want to keep smoking, we're going to have to do something and stop just joking around when it comes to the biggest issues we face. And so there is a combination, a neat combination of the two, the desire for freedom and people who say, you know, they want nothing more than their freedom, and then the merger of that with an ability to fight for it against a new world order threat, which is a threat to us all and a threat to the future of the planet and humanity. Also, Infowars.com, downtown Toronto to be transformed into lockdown police state this summer by Steve Watson, from PrisonPlant.com, an excellent, well-sourced Infowars article featuring the PressForTruth.ca video, Toronto Terror Drill caught on tape. The video shot by Dan Dixon, Steve Davies, and edited with the help of Brian Law. See PressFORTruth.ca for more details, and see Infowars.com for this article. We're making it big, folks. TDOT is on the map in a number of ways. Also, thanks to a number of local groups, including TorontoTruthSeekers.com. Check us out on the streets every Saturday. And also ConspiracyCulture.com, as mentioned. TorontoStreetNews.com, the Toronto Street newspaper out there, one of the best news sources for information about the New World Order and what we can do about them. And also the FreedomLink.org, networking patriot sites worldwide. But I'm out of here for this today, this 29th of April, 2010, to leave you with your 4 hours of Jazz Bungee. We have a special guest host. Mr. Watson has conscripted Mr. Michael Clifton to take you for a wild ride. And on that note, I'm going to leave you with some Jansport J here. Jansport J with Tradition and then Too Much. And some words of wisdom out there for you all. When you see things like the cover of the Metro and K9 kissing the World Cup, when you see the Now magazine today's The Brunch, 100 top spots for feeding that weekend wake-up call. When you see moving pictures and hot docs here, beyond the camera, focused on preeminent rock legends in the I Magazine, and so on and so forth, and you see our media today, don't just figure out what they're trying to tell you so you can understand it from the perspective they want to, but once in a while figure out why we might be told these things to get a better handle on the age and the era in which we're living in. I'm out of here, folks. Peace out. Have a great day.